Yeah,
it's always the joys of getting all the equipment set up properly, and
yeah, we do that. We also have a podcast, so I know what it involves.
Yeah, well, it's not too technical at this end, so don't you worry.
Yeah,
I like to keep things simple.
How long do you do your podcasts?
So, literally, I don't have a set time deadline, to be honest with you. I just like to just go with the flow and just chat. Yeah. Sometimes they're like half an hour, sometimes they're almost an hour. So
that's fine. I think,
yeah, a bit of flexibility. And also it's nice to sort of, I think, dive deep into topics and subjects rather than just having like snapshots of an overview or something. So I
that's think, true. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Yeah. I normally like record our podcast with my phone camera because of the quality difference. So I don't know, it makes it harder to edit it, but I'm just going to record it for, I don't know, my own purposes, and I can send it to you. I don't know, but you probably have your own way of editing it.
Yeah, again, because I've got so much on, I literally just keep it really simple.
Yeah, of course.
And just try and get efficiency. So, you know, we use Zoom. I record it on the Zoom and literally upload it and use that audio that we get from it and the video. Yeah. I've just started to whack onto YouTube. Now, in all honesty, I think when we get more, there's a bit more time and there's more capacity, we're looking to up the quality and improve it. But for now, to be honest with you, we're just literally trying this new audio setup. So we record the audio separately into Audacity. And then we're going to sort of stitch the two together. The quality of the audio is going to be a lot, lot better on the podcast, which it has been a bit ropey of late. So anyone who's listening now on the podcast, I do apologize. And the other thing I do on the podcast, actually, which is, you know, might be interesting for some people, is actually I do record literally everything. So like even now, if you're okay, I'm just going to literally just upload what we've got.
Yeah. Of course.
Without editing, I think it's quite interesting because people get to see like almost behind the scenes, like the chats before the podcast, yes, and maybe even after the podcast.
That's totally fine.
Anyone listens to some of the end of the other podcasts I've done, you know, we always have like off the record conversations, but obviously they're not.
That's very cool. Let me just do one thing. I'm going to turn off this one light here because it's a bit too bright.
That's cool.
With the other camera, so yeah, now I think this is, well, let's just go ahead and
definitely. But yeah, it's just all about sort of trying to make it an efficient process without too much stuff, because I know it's so hard to create content for everybody and it just takes so much time, and we were trying to find efficiencies.
It is, and when you add a little thing, it can explode like the workload, you know. It's so many different variables involved, like we have like so many different lines, like audio and video. It's always a lot of things involved, and then we intentionally wanted to keep it simple, but then if we just want to do a little improvement, then it just means a lot more work.
Definitely. So let's kick it off and we'll just dive straight into it. 3, 2, 1. Hey guys, Ben from Startup Chats, hope you're doing really well. I've got Chris Lear. Is it Lear, or is that, did I pronounce it correctly?
That's correct. Lear is perfect.
Perfect. So yeah, Chris, great to have you on board. Thanks for joining me. As I understand it, you're a co-founder of Lead Gen App, which is a SaaS business. So it'd be interesting to sort of dive into that and learn more about the business. But before we do, can we be interested to learn a bit about you and how you got to where you are?
Okay, sure. Yeah, first of all, thank you for inviting me. Ben, it's really, really nice to be here. So a bit about myself. I'm running the Lead Gen App, and I also run a marketing agency called Lead Cube for about 3 years. So 3 years ago, I was finishing up university. Actually, I come from Germany, so that's my background story. And then 4 years ago, I moved to the UK because I needed a new challenge, and I didn't really want to continue with that sort of study program and that work career that it was you know, it was meant for. So so I was just didn't really have a proper plan, but I just thought let's take on a new challenge and move to the UK. It's still closed, but it also has a lot of opportunity. It's English speaking, so that's I think what I wanted at the time. And yeah, then the course went over very quickly. And then after I finished that, I worked in a marketing agency.
So running back, did you go to university in the UK or in Germany?
Both. So okay. I did 2 years in Germany and I was studying actually with a company. It's called Corporate Study Program, where you're basically you're studying so that you can work at that place later on with that corporate brand. And I didn't really have the motivation for that after 2 years because I always knew I'm a bit more entrepreneurial. I'm definitely, I couldn't see myself doing that. So that's why I moved, did a change. You know.
And why is that? Where do you think that sort of entrepreneurial spirit comes from?
Oh, I mean, that's hard to pinpoint what that is. I think it's just, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. I think it's just maybe natural creativity, curiosity, or all those things combined, right?
Yeah. And were your parents, were they sort of running their own businesses?
I mean, that's interesting. No, they actually don't. That's like they're completely different in that sense. So it's not coming from that.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? So you're sort of completely, you know, going against the grain almost.
I'm different in that sense. Also, like in our family, I don't think anyone went to university. I was like the first. My grandpa did long time ago, but then out of like parents and other grandparents, I think no one really did. So yeah, I don't know really. Sometimes it's like
it's just the way you roll.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's like when you see too much of the other side. Let's say this is where you grow up. You kind of get fed up with it. Maybe, for example, if you see this is or like if for example school teaches you this is how your career should be or that sort of thing, then I think that could be a trigger moment for you to think, oh, now I want really something else.
Yeah, interesting. So you did that. Came over to the UK. Finished your studies. And then what?
And then I worked. I wanted to do my own thing with online marketing. I always did that in the background while I was studying. At the same time, I found some offers through the university of internships. I found this really interesting offer of working in an SEO agency. So I jumped on that. It was like 3 months and it was a good working experience. But then obviously the company wanted to keep me on board because that's why they do internships, right? It's not like a one-sided thing. So, but I didn't want to commit to that. So at that point I thought, now let's just do this. Let's just continue with my online marketing stuff. And I joined a co-working space locally. In Southend-on-Sea in Essex. That's where I used to study.
So just to clarify, so you did a bit of sort of work experience or like an apprenticeship type thing?
Yeah.
And then you sort of said, I've had enough of that. And you just said, well, I'm going to go in co-working space and start my own business.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like an internship, basically, just like for a few months. And then I just thought now is the time to properly jump off because otherwise, I could get stuck in this mode of just continuing to work, getting a good salary. So I didn't do that. And then in the co-working space, I met my co-founder after about, a few weeks. And we started talking to each other and he had his own, he actually has a web agency as well. And we started to then figure out what we can do together. And then it worked out very nicely. And we started a marketing agency and then later LeadGen as well. So it was like a gradual journey of getting to today.
Oh, fantastic. And so let's talk about the, well, I tell you what, I'll be interested to know a bit more about the SaaS business, actually, and how sort of that came to light in terms of your ideas, and then that sort of any sort of plans in terms of pre-marketing plans that you thought about doing, building up to the launch.
Yes. Okay. So the LeadGen app, our SaaS business, maybe to give you all the listeners a bit of background, is an online tool to build lead capture forms for online campaigns. So for websites and landing pages to get more conversions from your campaigns and to build any kind of custom form. So and the idea came from my colleague. So he came up with this idea and he already worked on it in the background, but he never really brought it to market. I think he is one of those people who have a lot of ideas, who are very creative. So he probably has built in the past 5, 6, 7 online tool ideas, but none of them he really pushed into the market. You know, you sometimes have that with developers, typically they have a lot of ideas, which I'm fascinated about. But then I said to him, let's just do this properly. And this is an idea with potential. So we then built this up to today. And it's still like obviously a longer journey still ahead. But yeah, in terms of marketing, I think you were asking marketing plan, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, just quickly, just to sort of pull back slightly, it's interesting, isn't it, talking about how so many people have these ideas.
Yeah,
it doesn't get out the door. It doesn't actually quite, you know, sort of come to anything. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you're so right, because so many people have these ideas, whether it's the developers or whoever, and it's just there's one thing having the idea, there's a whole other thing, you know, getting it out the door, getting it to market and actually getting it as a, you know, as a business. So yeah, that's great. That's great that you've got to that point. So building up to that point, you obviously were pushing in terms of the development, getting that all correct and working. How did you start planning your sort of go-to market strategy, and what sort of things did you do?
Okay, I think it was very much a natural process. It wasn't like that we had like a hard launch in that sense. So we always did both at the same time, developing the tool and marketing it. And we never really had a proper launch date. I think, well, we sort of had probably at the start, just sharing the tool to our contacts, so our friends that we already worked with. And that was a good way to get feedback. So and the tool has grown with those people. It wasn't really like that we have done the research much beforehand. Like we built this tool for our own needs in terms of for our marketing agency. And then we just built whatever we figured out along the way, especially in the first 6 months to 12 months. That up to this day. So we do interviews with our users. We have a Facebook community. That's pretty much the essence of the go-to-market strategy.
And how's that been?
It has been very interesting. And I think that's it's ultimately one of the best ways to do it, in my view, to build it based on feedback. I think just always a lot of things to work on, a lot of things to do. It's always still hard to prioritize what features to build. That is one of the core challenges we have. We have obviously just a limited amount of resources. And then we already have close to 1,000 users, and then there's like lots of requests coming in all the time. That's the real challenge to pick whatever really makes sense and we can deliver and we can commit to. That's a core challenge I can share. Besides that, yeah, it's just continuous progress on every front. That's, I think, is our philosophy on development, on marketing terms. I mean, we started the podcast, we started doing video. It's like constantly challenging ourselves.
Do you find it's challenging? I mean, has the SaaS business taken over from the agency business, or is the agency business still there in conjunction with the SaaS business?
On my side, yes, the agency business is there, but I have not. I turned it more into a consultancy business, meaning that I can let's say take on a project when I have the capacity. But the agency is very hard. So the agency model, I couldn't continue in that way with lead gen, with the SaaS. But at the same time, my colleague has a web agency. That one is still like properly going with like 100% focus on his side, and he has a proper team. But otherwise, if we had all of that combined, it would be three businesses. It would be pretty hard to manage. So what I do right now is like full attention to the SaaS business. And that was also one of the key learnings along the way. That's what really changed the game, to really put all the attention there. And the other thing I do with project focus now.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think you're right, unless you sometimes have to sort of not pivot, because I think pivot's the wrong word. You know, you identified, you know, there was a requirement within your business called Business the Agency, and it developed into the SaaS, and that's now sort of the priority, and the consultancy can come as and when.
Yes.
But it's interesting that sort of, I guess, the validation, which is part of any pre-launch strategy, in terms of, you know, is my product, you know, is there a marketplace for my product, certainly came probably from the fact that you wanted a tool for your own business. So
yes,
and you were helping yourself.
I think this is like a really key point, to do this validation beforehand in the ideal world. In our case, it was maybe a little different, because we definitely needed this ourselves. And it's also very common in the market already out there. So for example, yeah, there's many tools, many form builder tools. So you can see there is 100% a big market. There's new tools coming out pretty much every day. But in most cases, if I can give some tips here for, let's say, other founders thinking of building a SaaS business, then I would really focus heavily on this research at the start, using, let's say, polls and surveys in Facebook groups, speaking as much as possible to potential users within your network, but also unbiased people, because the types of answers vary often because of that. So if I speak to someone I know that as a friend of mine, it's very hard to be 100% objective. So it's a mix of those things, a mix of channels, and 100%, I can just say the research is super important.
Do you think the validation stage for you was more based around the fact that A, you need the product, and B, you knew that that type of product was widely used? So the validation in terms of speaking to individuals was less important. So would you say the fact that there was an existing market and that we need it anyway, was that enough validation for you guys?
Yeah, that's, I think, how it was. It was just different in that sense. And we just used the time of you know, onboarding more users as the research phase. And the research phase is still going on in that sense now. Maybe even more so now than ever, because now we are obviously getting more and more serious about also, say, documenting things and adapting new methods, learning from other SaaS that are already like way ahead of us. So it's, yes, it's exactly what you said. It's just a little different, but we could have also benefited from more research at the start. I mean, that does never harm you.
What would you have done differently, do you think?
I would have,
built a bigger Facebook group of like cohorts or people who are sort of really early adopters and try and get more people in and get them to like beta test more and things like that.
Yeah, probably, just more of it, more early on. I think also what I would have done differently is more planning. Initially we went more with the flow, also because we had other things to do. Like we had so many client commitments, projects. So it was hard to properly plan and to follow through with the plan. Now with 2020, this year, we have really completely flipped that. And we had like for the whole year, a product strategy and a marketing strategy. So that I would have done from day one, ideally, yeah.
And how, in terms of, again, sort of pre-launch phase, did you consider sort of product marketing within the mix? And what I mean by that is making, when you're developing the product, making it really sort of shareable. Was that a sort of a consideration, or had that not been a sort of on the radar? Was it more just that we just want this tool?
So what would be an example of shareable?
So again, a classic one I always sort of tend to refer to are things like Dropbox. So the way that product was developed was very much about sort of encouraging users to share to their community. Another one would be like within the product of Zoom, for example, which has just taken off. It encourages the way the product's been developed, it encourages users just to, you know, send an email with a link to Zoom, and then suddenly Zoom is on that individual's radar. They don't even have to download any software. They actually click on away they go. So like, I think they're really two interesting examples within the way that the product was developed they thought about the marketing of it within it, if that makes sense. So their marketing wasn't necessarily about creating a post on Instagram or Facebook, which obviously has its place, but it's more around getting the products out there as much as possible by the flow of the way that the product works, if that makes sense.
Yes. So that's a very good point. In our case, we are doing that. We want to do that using using our own form templates. So just coming up with creative examples of online forms. For example, we have a form that gives you a score, how conversion optimized your website is in 1 minute. So those sorts of things, calculator forms, creative forms that have the potential to be reshared. We also did a thing when the coronavirus hit the UK early on in March, April, you know, it was, there were a lot of government programs introduced. And we built this interactive lead gen form where you could find out what programs are applicable to you. So let's say you say, I'm a business, I am VAT registers, yes or no, and whatever, number of employees. And then it gives you a custom recommendation. So we tried those things to give value at the same time and have this potential to have a potential of like a viral effect. But what you're saying is really interesting. I think we can certainly do more in that area as well to make it more shareable and more appealing.
You know what? I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's always things to think about. Things to add. Going back to, again, sort of pre-launch, did you have an idea of your sort of perfect customer, or was it just literally everybody and anybody, please?
I think at the start, we didn't have that avatar. It was really something that evolved also. And sometimes we had...
Would that have done that before, do you think? Or...
Sorry?
Were you happy with the way it's gone? Would that have been better to have done that before you got the product?
Yes. But it's both. It always develops in some way. I think the product market fit is like there's little details that you sometimes change. And then you have a fit and when that little detail is not there, then you don't. So we kind of could say, okay, it's marketers, it's people that have websites. So relatively broadly, but then I think a lot of things happen also on the way. And then now we know what type of, like let's say marketing agencies are the target audience. Now we know what type of marketing agencies, how many staff, who we should speak to, what country, and then also the messaging, how to speak to them, where to speak to them. We found out Facebook groups are really good in that sense of creating this curiosity and getting testers on board. But yeah, I think it's very hard to find this out at the start just by using the drawing board. I think it's a complicated thing actually to find that fit.
No, you know what? It certainly is. Personally, I think it's absolutely crucial for any business to do that as early as they possibly can, and ideal well before launch, because ultimately, for me, I think it will tailor the approach to everything. Both, like you said, the messaging, where you go and find them. Where do these people hang out? You know, like you said, we've sort of discovered Facebook groups, which is a great source. So it's almost. I think one of the massive disadvantages for those that don't do that early doors is the fact that it just takes you longer to figure that out. So you just lost time, you just lose time. But ultimately, as long as you can find that out, and you know that's the key. And it's not to say that things don't iterate either, because you know you start on a path thinking this is my ideal audience, and actually you realize that no, they're not. I thought they were. Actually, it's interesting. I had a podcast chat with a guy who came from an accountancy background, and his SaaS business was focused towards accountants because that's who he thought he was developing it for. But as it turned out, it wasn't. And that was probably the worst user group. So, you know, you start off on a trajectory and you think you're on the right path, but it can go. It's definitely, I think that's the key. You've got to be open to be flexible. But I think it's important to have a plan to know who you are targeting. You just focus efforts.
Yeah,
absolutely. So moving forward. Yeah, carry on.
Sorry, just one more thing on this. I think in our case, the challenge also is that the tool can appeal to so many different groups, because it could literally be as broad as any website owner who needs a lead capture form. But we didn't want to keep it so broad. And I think also the other point I wanted to make is the pricing can change that targeting as well. So if we say we are a freemium tool, we all of a sudden build all these users that might not need it or might not, you know, it's, so sometimes you just like doing a little bit of change in pricing, going from to like, let's say increasing by 20, 30% with a small, even small price changes the whole thing. So there's a lot of variables.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it is, you know, pricing is definitely part of that in terms of targeting and that audience. You're 100% right. There's so many elements. And I think SaaS is a really interesting one where it's now, you know, the opportunities are available for anybody to build a SaaS business with incredible growth potential. And we all know those sort of stories. But equally, it is so competitive because anybody can. How have you found that that challenge? Because like you said, it's a competitive market space, marketplace within your niche. How have you found tackling that?
Yes, okay. I would say one thing we did is just building up our own brand identity. That, I think, gives you that little bit of a difference because a lot of our users know us personally, meaning that, okay, from Zoom calls, from a Facebook group, from a lot of email conversation, and they certainly remember, oh, these are the guys behind this brand. That is a big differentiation chance to use. At the same time, what else? Okay, with competition. Otherwise, also, when you have a lot of competition, you also often have a big market. So, which is a positive also. Like, it means there's always someone who needs this. Another way we've tackled it is just really focusing on organic rankings in Google by making sure we are ranking for those keyword terms and by straight away coming up. Now, that's obviously a challenge on its own, but we have grown quite in a decent way over the last year and a half. So I think those three things, the brand, the demand itself that is there, and just rankings.
No, I'm really glad you actually touched on branding because I think it's like anything. Why do you choose to buy Heinz over something else? Why do you buy Adidas instead of Nike? Yeah. An Adidas trainer might be better than a Nike trainer, but if you're a Nike fan, you're just still going to buy the Nike. And so it's got nothing to do with the product or even the price sometimes. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Yes. And I guess you know how powerful brand, you know, good branding is. And I think, again, often that isn't thought about too much at the beginning, particularly. So I'm really glad you touched on that. In terms of how when you talk about branding, how did you think about your brand?
I think also it started maybe not too long ago. So this also happened maybe after one and a half years in. Now we are about 2 years, two and a half years in. So that's when we took that branding aspect seriously. Firstly, with like a properly done website, which I think you have to have as a SaaS. If you look around all the SaaS tools out there, they have a proper site. But also not just a good looking website, but then also the content on the blog. So we produce blog content constantly. A major thing on how we achieve branding is just video. I think that would probably even be the main thing I can say, what gets you there, what builds this identity is just like doing video tutorials, little videos for LinkedIn, maybe also obviously for the own website, for the blog. And then we have started a podcast about half a year ago. So I would say video is the best way to do that.
Interesting. I think one thing might be worth considering for yourself as well, just refocus on why you do what you do. It's a classic, what's your mission and your vision? And think about what drives you, what's going to motivate somebody to come to you, you know, because as you scale, as you get bigger, you know, there's only so far your network and your personal sort of interactions with people go, and you've got to almost build it to a level where it's the machine is working. But I think to do that, you really need to be, and I think this is applicable to every business out there, have really focused on who you are. And it's a classic mission and vision statement, but I think that I don't like using the mission and vision statement too much because I think it's quite sort of, it can be taken a bit cheesy and a bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You want to be like the best in the world. It's like, well, yeah. but it's got to be realistic.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Maybe it's also...
But I think it is important because people will... Yeah, I was just going to say, I think people will come to you because they understand that brand is about, I don't know, you know, ultimately they want to help save the environment, or this brand, they want to be this good. I want to help sort of the small guy on the street, you know, or we're like super behind, you know, the butchers in Park Lane. If there are any butchers in Park Lane, I don't know. But, you know, you get my point. It's really differentiating yourself against your competitors. And if you've got that strong core value, I think that's really important. And again, I think this is all part of that pre-launch thinking about all these things, which
100%. Critical. Yeah, 100%. And I think in our case, I would say it's three factors really that stand out for us. I'm really motivated by building a strong team. So that is one aspect of it. By empowering, sometimes I think the saying is your team are your first customers. And then some way that is true. That's what I really enjoy. That's what drives me. That's what motivates me. So that's number one. Then also essentially like just customer success. When we see we can help a company when we get this feedback. So for example, we have like an agency user in the US who then sends us on Facebook. Yeah, thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. You really helped me win these new clients, all these things. That is, I think in some way that probably speaks for everyone that has to be there if you're building a business. So that's super key. And then the third one, which I think we are unique in, is our customer support dedication. With that, I mean, you have a lot of tools, SaaS tools that have free plans. And then what you find is the support is different for free users to pro users. We don't do that. We see everyone as the same. We want to make everyone successful. And from the business level, we see free users as a way for us to grow, for them to grow with us, right? So it's not like they're free users, they're on a lower level. No, they are now in the system, in the community. And it's now our job to help them and to also upgrade them. So it's those I think are the fundamental core values.
I think that's a cracking approach because, again, it's interesting, isn't it, with the SaaS and the freemium model, where effectively those people in the free tier, you know, if you can really nurture them, you know, they are going to be your future customers. It's once you've got them, it's cheaper to sort of hopefully upsell than it is to go and look for, you know, new leads and all the rest of it all the time. So it's about building up that big pool of free users and getting those conversion rates. Well, that's interesting. So let's chat about that if that's okay. Just you know, because I think again, anyone who's interested in SaaS businesses or SaaS models, or have existing SaaS businesses, how have you found that the planning phase of the mechanics of conversion rates and measuring the stats? And monitoring it and how has that been going? Have you been sort of pushing conversion rates up and, you know, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, that's a good topic.
There's something questions there to throw into the mix, but
that's cool. I mean, it's a topic I'm really passionate about also. Because we are looking at metrics a lot. And also what you said was conversion rate. For example, what we do is like we do a conversion test every 2 weeks or four weeks long, where we have a homepage variant that we test, and then we compare them against the previous one. Now, you could also say it's an A/B test. It's just like we focus at one time on one page, and it's marginal gains. Often, it's like you increase your conversions by 0.15%, but we see that happening consistently. So, for example, we started back in, let's say, August. We have an increase of 0.2%. Then we have another one of 0.3%. And then all of a sudden, you have already 2% better than you used to be. And though it's super important to do that. And besides conversion rate, there's other metrics, obviously. Website traffic, conversion from free to pro. Also, how many users build forms. But conversion rate is one of the key ones, actually.
And interestingly, did you consider these sort of conversion rates before you sort of launched? Did you have an idea, you know, are we expect 20% to sign up and 10% to go from here to here? And were you massively shocked to see the reality, or was it better than you expected?
Yeah. Yes, certainly you have these moments often, maybe not at the start, because that was like a stepwise process. But then let's say when we did those yearly plans, I think you're always over-optimistic, unfortunately. Or maybe we are, we still have to learn that. But I think it's a common problem. yes, it definitely was. You always think you can do more. But at the same time, I want to share one more really cool thing, which is we have set like for every month goals for key metrics, including, let's say, website traffic, conversion rate. And with the traffic, we used to be behind after a few months in the year. And then we thought like, oh, this is now so far off. I mean, how can we even keep looking at those metrics? But I said we have to insist on them. We have to keep doing with it. And now we are actually on the other side. We are so far above it that it was so important to keep them and to keep looking at them every week, every month.
You know what? I think that's a really, really interesting and vital point for anyone who's looking at SaaS business, because actually it is literally about just measuring and looking at the numbers. Yeah. And refining.
Yes.
Because ultimately, once you've got your product out there, and obviously you need to constantly look at, you know, maintaining it and developing it and supporting it and all that stuff, that's almost the day-to-day. But actually, I think the most important thing is just literally keeping an eye on the figures.
Yes.
And testing, you know, refining, because it doesn't stop.
And sticking to the goals is super important, right? I think it also builds this habit. If you keep looking at your goals and if you're not going to change them, it builds this habit, right? If you allow yourself once to change a goal or to change a plan, it's like a trap that it goes downhill from there, and it reflects in many other areas. So that's definitely core philosophy that we keep following through with things. Yes, and also to have maybe clear roles in the team is important. So my colleague is more the tech guy, I'm the marketing guy, and I'm reporting to him on those numbers. He has a meeting other way around where he briefs me on the tech side. That's another key thing, obviously.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's great that you've got another founder who's, you know, technical. So, you know, you can focus on your expertise and he can focus on his.
Yeah, that's a good mix. It's a great mix. And yeah, when you're building a new team, definitely consider that, right? It's not great. It's always great to, let's say, with friends, you're sometimes similar, right? So you have the same hobbies, same interests. But with the business, it pays off to have different skill sets and maybe even a little bit of a different type of mind. Yeah, that's a little different comparing, let's say. Yeah.
I was going to ask, you sort of touched on the channels and acquisition of potential leads. And you said, you know, the organics working quite well, Google, socials. Did you, again, before you went to the market, did you have an idea of the channels that you wanted to target?
No, I think we didn't have the idea back then. I think SEO was one of our main channels because it's my background in online marketing. So we went with our experience, basically. If I had a background in, let's say, paid ads, I might have done that, which is actually interesting. We haven't done too much with that, which we're now doing more of, those ads. We haven't had this plan at the start. Would it have been better?
As looking out, I'm moving forward, what have you got sort of like the
channels? Oh yeah, now we have. Definitely. Now we have it all laid out. We have 2-3 key channels. And then we have the podcast as a brand building exercise and a few other things, but we are pretty much focused on those few channels. Yes. And we have it laid out like alongside with those metrics. So it all comes back to, let's say, SEO has certain metrics, then email marketing has, and so on.
Have certain channels performed better than you expected, and have others not been as good as you maybe thought?
Yes, for sure. I'm just trying to think. I mean, SEO has been consistently good in the last month. At the start, it was a bit slow, but now it's been good.
That's the nature of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the nature of it. I mean, let me just think. Email. It's hard to say, really. Like, has anything been not so? I think
social side. Have you tried different social channels and you thought, actually, this is a waste of time? Or
yes, what's definitely a waste is Facebook organic posts and in a sense of pages. But I think the key here is, like, because we have done so much work in on online marketing projects before, we kind of, I think, already had the idea of this, right? It wasn't like we got majorly disappointed because we expected too much. I think that was maybe in our case, we already had these things on our mind. So we didn't have this big surprise, I think. But yeah, what doesn't really work so well is like organic Facebook posts. Instagram, we stayed away from completely for our brand, because can work, but then yeah, what Instagram is used on mobile mainly, and we have a web app, so I don't know how that would fit. Twitter has been really good at the start when they still had a lot of, when they had different policies where you could automate more things. Now it's a bit more tricky. So yeah, I think what we're finding is,
I think the challenge with organic just generally is just, particularly with the socials, is you've got to pay to play, really. Like you said, Facebook is just organic growth is just bugger all, isn't it? And you know, you've really got to advertise.
Yes.
And that's the challenge with a lot of them. I think LinkedIn, there's a huge still organic growth opportunity there. I'm sure they'll find that up at some point.
Yeah, LinkedIn has been good, I think. I think one learning definitely is that just came to my mind, Facebook groups, that I said early on, they are really powerful. Sometimes, you know, I remember I just did a post, we need some testers, we have this new tool. Obviously on my mind I had, okay, this could be a nice thing to acquire users, but yeah, what you do post is just like, you want some testers. And it turned out to be really good for winning customers. In fact, the customer we have with the most amount of online forms came from a Facebook group.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
And again, it's a really nice approach, isn't it? Because you're almost sort of saying, hey, listen, you know, especially with when you've got that freemium model, you know, you're just saying, hey, look, we really need some people to test this out. It's free. Mm. You know, here you go.
Yeah.
You're offering them something which is going to really benefit them, hopefully. But you're obviously acquiring a free user and getting them into your ecosystem. So
yes,
that's a good approach.
Yes, I think generally communities are good. And one more thing that has been helpful is like personal, how can I say, like we used to be in a co-working space in London called Tech Hub, which is like a big community of 400 startups. We got a lot of business from there as well. So all these offline things are actually still quite good. Offline sales, personal contacts, networking, that's still a very good way to sell and to build relationships.
No, definitely. I completely agree, actually. I think we can get too stuck into to that online world, but I think
yes,
particularly social has a mixture of the online with the real world, and you actually have these sort of relationships in the real world as well as online. It's just so much stronger. I mean, like, you know, like for us, you know, we connected and we could have just stayed connected on LinkedIn, for example, but now we're actually virtually.
Yes.
Connecting, we're building, you know, like a connection and a relationship. Yes. So that's cool.
And
I think that's where the world of the internet is just incredibly powerful. But yeah, moving on a little bit with them, you sort of touched on the fact that you started to dip your toe into paid advertising. Obviously, that's gonna sort of, I guess, bring up other complexities in terms of customer acquisition. You know, making sure you keep an eye on costs, and that's even more so with those conversion rates. You know, how much does that cost to acquire that new, you know, potential customer, and then bring them through that funnel? Have you found that sort of, you know, now you start to dip your toe into that model? Because obviously before, when it's not costing you anything specifically to get, you know, organic people to come and try your freemium tool other than your time. Now you're going, right, I'm paying a check to whoever and get my, you know, ad in front of people. How many people are clicking on it, you know, and those conversion rates. So how are you finding that first stage of dipping your toe into paid advertising?
Yes, I think it's really early days for us in that sense. I couldn't now give you, let's say, an example because we haven't done too much with it yet. But what we'll certainly do is like to do it similar like all the other channels with metrics. And one of the reasons we stayed away from ads was just our freemium model. I think it just didn't seem such a good move to now go fully on the ads if we, in fact, we're still having a freemium tier and we're building up all these users. So then you pay for all these clicks and all these users when you have a marginal amount converting. So that was on our mind a lot of the times. And yeah, I think we'll just have to, see, and we're just going to do it just like the conversion testing, always a little bit, becoming a bit better all the, every day, every week.
No, definitely. And keep an eye on those, acquisition costs and all the rest of it.
Yeah, of course.
So what's the future? What's your, where do you want to see this go? And do you want to exit out of it at some point? Or is this like, you're going to be doing this for the next 40 years?
That's a great question. I think you often have those chats with also like founders and people that build similar things. A lot of people are motivated by exit. I'm not really motivated by that. My colleague isn't as well. For now, we just want to build this brand, this company. And like, we have so many like exciting things on mind that we want to do. We want to not just keep it as, let's say, one type of tool builder. We want to make more around that. So we're just going to focus on that. And yeah, we're not thinking about, exiting it. And very long term. I think personally, I just like to keep building the brand and do more exciting things in online marketing rather than, let's say, thinking, oh, I'm building now a startup and then I'm going to sell it. No, it's just like, I want to build the business, not sell the business.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, that's great. That's fantastic. And in terms of products, you're just developing the online products and developing the tools and focused on that area more than what's around the corner almost.
Yes. It's a tricky one. I think definitely we focus on right now, but we still need to, the planning is both is equally important. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of advice, tips for anyone who's still listening, have you got any sort of pointers you could maybe give someone who's thinking about starting their own SaaS business or any online business?
Okay. I think, yeah, there's lots of things I think that we touched on also. If you can do it with other people, with co-founders, I think that's a great thing. It's a great benefit. And it's just scaling things up quicker. Obviously, also find the right mix. It's hard sometimes to really know what feels right. But if you can make that work, that's certainly a huge plus. Then to be 100% honest with yourself, I think is one advice, in the sense of understanding and being honest. Is this really something we can build? Is this like something that we can sell? And I don't know if I can give you an example, but this like but generally just like don't try to
would you say it's more a case of don't be delusional almost, if the market's telling you this sucks, take it on the chin and either pivot or do something else.
Yes.
And not just think, if I think it's the best idea in the world, then everyone else should.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. And that has to be like, I think there's this founder or
audience, isn't it? Ultimately, I think it's just about listening to the audience and saying, I'm a user group of one, and I might think I'm right, but ultimately I could be just
so yeah, wrong. Absolutely.
If the audience says this is good, then great. But if they say it sucks, then
that's true.
Get on and move forward. Either pivot and adjust or
And have this philosophy like everywhere, like internally, also in the team. For example, if projects don't go as they should, or if whatever, things don't happen, then there's this guy, this marketer, or not marketer, like businessman, very, very big influencer, Ray Dalio. You might have heard of him. He has written a very good book. It's called Principles, I think. And in there, he spoke about this one principle he has about radical transparency. And that's the one word that I was maybe looking for, and everywhere, in every area. That's one key tip. Otherwise, Just planning research at the start, as we said, just figure out where the place is in the market for what you do. And building a brand is always a good idea. There's another thing that we talked about. Whatever business you are, building a brand is a great thing and helps you.
Awesome. Actually, one last question, because I thought it was very relevant. Obviously, you're from Germany. Have you launched into Germany?
Good question. Well, as a SaaS, we obviously like international.
I was going to say, because obviously, you know, being a SaaS, you can, you know, it's available to anyone online, but there are different language challenges, aren't there? Whether you sort of have to, you know, tweak your website accordingly. So that's, it was something that just sort of came to me because I was about to wrap it up. I thought, you know, it'd be interesting.
Yes. As a SaaS, we're pretty much everywhere. We have a good number of users from Germany that find us organically, but we haven't really done much in terms of, let's say, translating the website into different language. I think we thought about it, but then we thought, what's
I was going to say, I know, you know, English is the universal business language, but do you think that's important to do that? You know, like, for example, if you launch it in Japan, do you need to, you know, think about it being in Japanese?
I think it would be a huge plus to have, but then I'm not too sure what the priority should be. I know, for example, Neil Patel, the online influencer, he has translated all his blog content to Brazil, Portuguese for Brazil and all these other countries, and it really helped him. But I would probably not recommend this at an early stage, actually, because you want to get one thing right first, and then the English market is like tremendously huge. So, but
you still get from Germany signed up, so that's all good.
Yeah, we have German users, yes.
good man. Brilliant, Chris. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll have to definitely keep in touch. And can't wait to sort of watch your business grow and see it develop over time. But keep in touch. We'll definitely do this again.
Thanks so much. And I really, really enjoyed this talking to you. And definitely let's keep in touch and follow each other.
Yeah, sounds good. Cheers, Chris.
Okay, cheers.
We'll wrap up there, Chris. Thanks so much. That was brilliant. I'll let you crack on, because I'm sure you've got lots to be getting on with today.
Exactly, yeah. I really, really, really enjoyed it, actually. It was a very natural conversation, I think.
No, definitely. It was, I think that's the best way. It's just like literally chatting to a mate down the pub, isn't it?
It's a lot for us to learn. A lot for us to learn for our podcast. I think it's actually very interesting, because ours has not been that much of a good flow, maybe for me now thinking about it. But it's definitely that's the best way.
I think the key is just to do whatever you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And because ultimately, you know, we're just all, you know, you can't pretend to be somebody else. So you just got to be yourself and just do whatever you feel natural, because, you know, if you're going to do lots of podcasts or whatever it is, you just got to just got to pump it out. So you've got to be yourself and comfortable.
Yeah, sure. And one more question I have, like, how many episodes have you done so far?
So this is my season 2.
Yeah.
I started my podcast a couple of years back. And it was sort of with a different sort of reason and a different goal. And I sort of stopped that for a while when I got busy with my own sort of marketing agency and tech startup. And so that I just basically parked all my socials, because I was just like, I haven't got the capacity. I just need to focus on getting stuff done. So I relaunched it really as part of my own sort of pre-launch, and it's been great. You know, so the type, my, is, you know, the name of the podcast has changed, I decided to keep all my historical content on there, because I think, I'm not one for like, oh, I want to delete it all because it's not relevant. It's like, well, it
might be relevant, definitely.
And if it's relevant for one person, then great. But season 2 is all about, you know, startup chats, chatting to founders, CEOs, and specifically right now, you know, I find it fascinating about the whole pre-launch phase, because I'm in that phase. You know, listening to how other founders and businesses have done that, and sharing that. And then when I move forward to post-launch, I'm going to maybe talk to the founders about how they found that. So I'm almost, I'm doing it. I'm doing the podcast for myself already.
that's perfect. Yeah. And I'm sure you hear a lot of stories this way, a lot of good insight.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a great way just to connect with other founders, you know, who are going through similar phases and situations and, you know, problems and, you know.
Yes. It's exactly. Yeah, so, 100%. That's good to see. I'll definitely keep in touch and looking forward to whenever you launch this episode. Yeah,
definitely, definitely. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up.
And, let's wrap it up. Okay.
Have a good day.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers.